Okay, so everybody pretty much agrees, right? An ideal agricultural system would be able to produce large amounts of outputs for a long time, like forever, with few inputs and without degrading the resource base upon which it depends. Today we're hearing a lot about these perennial crops where we have increasing evidence to support might be able to do just that. So I had the pleasure of working with a group at the Land Institute in North Central Kansas a number of years ago, looking at a unique set of systems where we were comparing annual crops to some perennial croplands that in this case had been annually harvested for hay for up to 75 to 100 years with few inputs, for example, no fertilizer and 12 times less energy imports, but we're still able to maintain high yields over time comparable to these annual croplands when we look at it in terms of nitrogen output going off of those fields. And at the same time, we're keeping the soil levels, for example, soil organic carbon was higher, soil organic nitrogen, microbial biomass, and soil food web diversity in those sites. So, unfortunately, when we looked at those systems originally, we did not look at, in any detail, the perennial root systems that we think might be contributing to the ability of these grasslands to maintain yield over time with few inputs. So we went back a number of years later, in 2008, to take a look at both the perennial roots and the soil properties at the same time so that we can draw direct relationships. We looked at two different studies, one that we call a long-term study, which had paired annual cropland fields and perennial grasslands, which again had been harvested continuously once a year for at least 75 years. And what was unique is these were on similar landscape positions and soil types, which is oftentimes difficult to find because some of the prime land has been long ago converted to annual cropland. We also looked at, in one site, an area that was converted directly to annual crops using best management practices, in this case, no tillage, using herbicides, so that we could look at some of these relationships in the absence of some of the complicating management practices that have changed over time, such as tillage. So in 2008, we went back to do this next set of data, taking soil samples and root samples in May and June, and looking at those soil and root samples for a number of properties. Keep in mind that these soil and root samples were separate cores of different diameters going down to 1 meter in depth. The root samples were divided in half each core vertically and washed for using a root elutriation system. So what's exciting about this is it very gently washes those roots using a bubbling action in order and flotation action in order to get a larger percentage of the roots out of the soil in order to look at these factors. And then half of those roots were scanned using Winrizo software in order to look at root length and surface area. So what did we find? Root biomass in the perennial grassland systems was 3.6 to 7 times greater over the 1 meter depth in the perennial grassland than in the annual cropland, which remember is all in wheat at this point. These differences were significant at both dates and all depths when we're looking at the biomass fraction there. What's interesting is a good percentage of this biomass is concentrated in the top layers, about 68 to 74% in the top 40 centimeters. When we're talking about this biomass, it's good to keep in perspective how much this really is and put some numbers on it, like our last speaker just talked about. So in May, it was 9.4 metric tons per hectare. in the grassland versus 2.5 in the annual cropland over that 1 meter depth. And in June, the spread was a little higher, 10.5 to 1.5 megagrams per hectare. So we're oftentimes now encouraged to look at root length as biomass because it can be a better indicator of root function. What we're looking at here is root length in meters per meter squared, and the root length was also significantly greater in the perennial grasslands than in the annual crops. The difference was 2 to 2.5 times greater as you go down in depth. This is 52 compared to 24 kilometers per meter square of root down to that meter in depth in May, and 44 to 19 kilometers per meter squared in June. We also looked at root length in a number of different size fractions because different size fractions can be related to different types of root function. We found that in all 8 size classes, these differences were significant, with the exception of the very smallest size class, up to 0.1 millimeters in the top 10 centimeters of soil. In that small section, the upper section of soil, not only was there not a significant difference, but interestingly, wheat had a trend for being have longer root in that top 10 centimeters of the 0.1 fraction. But what we were really interested in here was looking at the relationships between these root metrics and our soil properties. You can see all of the ones that are in green and bold are significant correlations, with a significant correlation between root length, microbial biomass carbon, total nematode communities, soil organic carbon, and particulate organic carbon, matter carbon, as well as the nematode enrichment index, which is a ratio of bacterivores to fungivores indicating nutrient cycling, particularly nitrogen, in that soil. Another way to look at these relationships is using a nonmetric multidimensional scaling analysis. In this analysis, we're looking at each data point on the screen is a conglomeration of the nematode community in these sites made up of 56 different genera. The dots on the screen that are closer together are more similar, and the dots on the screen that are farther apart are more different when you're looking at those nematode communities. You can see that all the black dots on the right side of the screen are the grasslands nematode communities, and the distribution falls to the left for those that came from the cropland wheat fields. This distribution was significantly different when you look at the analysis. In order to look at the relationship of these nematode communities to other factors that were looked at in the system, you overlay those factors and you see the vectors, and the vector direction and length relates to how strong that correlation is. You can see that our root factors, root biomass, length, and surface area are all pointing towards the perennial grassland nematode community, as well as the soil organic carbon, microbial biomass carbon, and soil organic nitrogen. The mites are pointing towards the other axis, the top, because unfortunately we only looked at them in the top depth. The basal index, that BI, that's pointing towards the annual cropland, is an indicator of disturbed nematode communities, which makes sense in that tilled system. So here we're seeing some evidence that there is a relationship between these root properties and the soil quality properties, such as soil organic carbon, that might be driving these systems to be able to maintain over time. However, we're not able to dissect out many of the management practices that might also be able to be contributing in these longer-term systems with a long history. So let's take a look at this overlay plot, where remember we converted perennial grassland to annual crops using no tillage 5 years before we took this data. We see that root biomass is greater in the perennial grassland versus the annual crop, but the difference is only about double compared to, remember, when we looked at the longer term sites, that was 3.6 to 7 times greater. So we have a closer distribution. And you may be wondering why I left that one outlier on the plot in June down at the 60 centimeter depth. That's because as we were physically looking at these root samples and washing them, we found tap roots that looked like they were from compass plant down deep in the soil of an annual wheat field, 5 years after it had been converted to annual crops, which led us to suspect, wait a second here, something must be going on. There might not just be wheat roots in these plots. When we look at root length, we do not see significant differences between the wheat and perennial grasslands at most depths and dates, with the exception of the intermediate soil depths, 40 to 80 centimeters, where that spread does become significantly different. However, we are suspecting that we might have confounded this data with the presence of old, perhaps refrigerated roots down in these deeper depths. So in order to try and figure out what was going on here, we looked at carbon isotope analysis. Using this, you can figure out whether root and soil carbon fractions are coming from C3 or C4 plants. So you can see C3 plants should have an isotope signature of negative 23 to negative 34, versus C4 plants should have a carbon signature of negative 9 to negative 17. Our long-term sites fall within the ranges you would expect. So the kind of dark line with the dashes on both sides, that was roots that were taken from the wheat field that has been in annual crops for a long time. So our average there was negative 25, to be expected. The dark line on the far right is the root from the grassland site, which also had, I think it was negative 14, an expected range. But our dots here with the standard deviation, the open dots are our wheat roots, which are falling in an intermediate range, which means that they have that they have a mixture of C3 and C4 derived carbon in those roots, so probably a mixture of the prior grassland roots and wheat roots in that site 5 years after it was converted. We also looked at the carbon from a number of the different soil carbon fractions, and all of the soil carbon fractions, with the exception of the particulate organic matter fraction that is largest, were also derived from C4 plants. So here we're seeing that even 5 years after conversion, we have significant carbon coming from older roots, in this case perennial roots, in the area. So we were able to look at a long-term system that had been producing outputs for a long period of time, a perennial system, and at the same time maintaining soil quality, and relate some of these soil carbon and biological factors to the root factors in those sites, and perhaps, quite interestingly, found that even 5 years after conversion to annual crops, we're still seeing carbon from old perennial systems that could be continuing to influence below ground ecosystem dynamics. So I just want to thank everybody in the room that helped with this project. It was a great team, and I feel like we've learned a lot. Thank you, you guys.
Do we have 5 minutes for questions?
So what people do to look at live versus dead roots, I'm sorry. So what people do to discriminate live versus dead roots is oftentimes just based on the coloration of those roots. And when I looked at the literature and then when we sat down to try and do that, it was very difficult to do. I think that works probably pretty well when you're working with one plant where you really start to see this is what that root looks like. So for example, when we were looking at the wheat roots, they had a kind of a distinctive coloration, a distinctive like translucency that lets you know that they were still living. When we were looking at the diverse grass root system, I was not able to tell. And so those are both living and dead, with the exception of things that were breaking up enough that they were, you know, going through the sieves. Right. So from our study, we aren't able to see that, but from looking at the literature, there's some really interesting studies where they're looking at the longevity of these roots. And there's probably less root turnover than you would sometimes imagine. So for example, a study that was done, I think in 1948 in Washington State, they looked at how long it took to, you know, build up to your optimum root biomass and then the percentage of plant death. And up to 3 years, most of those roots were new roots, and it was really only at that point that they started, you know, more of them recycling. So some of these roots can have a really long lifetime. Yes. Right. Sure. So he had two questions there. One was the composition of the perennial grassland community. So I apologize, this was just a pretty picture. It's not the site. We didn't dig down into the prairies that we were looking in because they're pretty unique areas. This is other perennials, sorry to confuse everybody, but those grasslands are primarily big blue stem, little blue stem, there's some Indian grass, and then a smaller percentage of a number of different forbs and grasses in there. The forbs and legumes tend to be, it was quite small, like less than 5% each of them, versus a lot of big blue stem and a lot of little blue stem. And your second question was in regards to what might happen with tillage. I guess I can't really speculate. I mean, there's lots of things that we know happen with tillage, but in this case, what was really interesting is a lot of the roots that we could physically distinguish as saying, I think this is an old perennial root, were actually down deeper in the soil, so 40 to 80 centimeters, which the tillage wouldn't have been affecting. Right, so as you're going more towards the left, though, that means that you have a higher percentage of C3 plants. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the literature too, there's some things about basically the temperature and moisture conditions that are helping with the decomposition of these things. So what would be still there?